Hello, Yes But Why listeners. This is your host, Amy Jordan. Welcome to Yes But Why, episode 247, my conversation with playwright Ulrich Davis. But first, let's chat about our sponsors. Today's episode is sponsored by Audible. Get your free audiobook download and your 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. Audible is available on most of the devices in your home. Go now to audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy to download the app and sign up to get your free audiobook today. Our other sponsor for today's episode is my company, PodcastCadet.com. My husband, Chris Jordan, and I run the company, PodcastCadet.com. We provide advice and production help to anyone who needs it. We do one-on-one consultations. We have prefab videos to help with specific issues like what audio equipment to use or best practices for interviewing. We can give you a little push or we can help you with the production of all your episodes. Contact us now at podcastcadet.com and use code YBY20 to get 20% off the first service or workshop you buy. Podcastcadet.com, helping creators navigate the waters of podcasting. In this week's episode of Yes But Why, I interviewed playwright and director Ulrich Davis. Ulrich is the artistic director of the Sankova Collective, a nonprofit theater organization based in Houston, Texas. In this episode, we talk about producing theater, Olivia Pope, and slam poetry. Listen in now for a really great discussion. I now present to you Yes But Why, episode 247. Ulrich Davis on building connections with your characters, your audience, and your community. Enjoy! I'm Amy Jordan, and this is Yes But Why Podcast. Yeah!
Art is weird. Like, I don't know. It's like I learned all of the rules so that I could break them. Mm-hmm. But I also know there's nothing reciprocal. Like, there's nothing like reciprocal energy, like in the room with the people you're collaborating with or even the audience. And that's obviously right now, that's what I'm missing the most is like that energy that you get from the audience as you're doing the thing that like lets you know that you're on the right path and that all the jokes are landing and that, you know, the pathos is there, like their hearts are invested instead of everyone just kind of checked out. And with, you know, this Zoom theater and like doing things on thing, it's so easy for people to just kind of like tune out instead of, you know, be invested like they would in the theater.
Totally. Yeah, definitely. It's way easier to tune out.
Right.
And like you can't, a lot of times the audience is not on camera and the people are, the actors are. So like they're usually just like acting to themselves. Like, right. Like even like in the show that you and I did.
Right.
When we did that scene, I really wanted to look at you, but I couldn't because it wasn't going to be visually, it wasn't going to work out for the vibe.
It wouldn't work. Like, yeah.
So and I'm looking like near you. I had to stare at my camera. Like.
Yeah,
which is above my like my monitor, so like I know you're there, but I'm staring above your head, talking to you, and I'm like, don't look away, don't look at him, don't look at you,
right, like, because then for them they're like, oh, they're looking at each other, but for us we're like, oh God, this feels weird, and I think that's more of like the film world, which I've like dabbled in a little bit as far as screenwriting and acting on film goes, but I've never really just like done it for real for real. And I think a lot of the things for film, like, I just do not enjoy. Like, I don't like how awkward it is, how because they're like, oh, well, it's not as rehearsed as theater. But it is, though. Like, film is more rehearsed because you have to get it from so many different angles and the lighting and the makeup and all of that stuff. And it doesn't feel as organic to me as theater does.
Mm-mm. There are some things they do in one take. Can you imagine?
Right.
Can you imagine the idea?
I can't imagine.
That you have a line that is your important line in a movie.
Yeah.
And you say it one time and then they're like, great. That's good.
Like, oh, got it. And I'm like, now, wait a minute. I've been here for 16 hours and I've flown. It's like, you know, it is crazy. And I think it's less about people and more about the camera. And I'm interested in the people. I'm interested in like the collaboration and the synergy and the learning each other's like, you know, energy and rhythms to things. Mm-hmm. That to me makes the experience too.
You know, I think based on what you've said, I feel like theater is something that is about the whole space, including the audience. Like, it's an experience mm-hmm. we're all going to go through. Whereas a film is like personal experience that you witness.
Right. Right. It's you're witnessing instead of experiencing in it.
Yeah.
And for me, I like things that are immersive. Like, I'm a very hands-on person. I've always been that way. Like, even when I was younger, I'm like, don't tell me how to do it. Like, give it to me and I'll just learn, you know? I'm the one who'll like, I'll take the instructions to something and I'm like, I'll figure it out. Because to me, that's more interesting. Like, I'd rather fail and messed up and get frustrated and go through all the highs and lows of that journey just so it can feel real, instead of someone doing that for me and I'm just watching. Like, that to me is boring. Like, I don't want to do that. And theater, even whether I'm in the audience or on stage, I'm still doing something. Like, I'm actively working to relate to the character or figure out their problem or predict it. Like, sometimes I love to predict, like, oh yeah, he's going to fall in love with her and then it's going to be a tap number, you know, whatever.
and then clearly a tap number.
It has to be a tap number.
You know.
And then you got to have the 11 o'clock number for the act one break.
Mm-hmm,
those are, you know, mainly for the musical theater. But if it's like a straight play, then, oh, they're going to have a fight at the kitchen sink, because, you know, every kitchen sink is a drama. And, you know, it's a thing. And those are things that you as an audience member, you're working too.
You know what, though? You were talking earlier about the about like television scripts and stuff.
Yeah,
that's what I've been teaching a one-on-one tutorial on sitcom scripts. So I'm working with this girl on how to write it and format it and different stuff. And the same kinds of things that you're talking about in theater are there in sitcoms, right? The idea that it's like at the act break, this has to happen at like this is how many like beats of a story there needs to be. Like, this is how many threads there have to be.
That is why I'm a little more drawn to TV over film, because I can grow with the characters. There's nothing like an Olivia Pope. You know, like we've seen her. She was kidnapped. She was banging the president in the White House. She was getting chided by her daddy. You know, like, she has been through she's negotiating diplomacy with like foreign ambassadors. She's talking herself out of like blackmail. It's a journey that you go with, you know, these characters over years, versus now I think films sell you an idea and just are trying to make the money back. Like, most big films that like you're seeing now are, here's a really dope concept and a really dope actor you like, give us your money so we can make our money back. And I leave it like, okay, that was cute, like, okay, but I'm not like particularly moved. Versus what's moved me now lately has been TV, has been theater, where I'm like emotionally invested.
Yeah. I like your Olivia Pope example too, because if you think about it from the point of view of Kerry Washington, she got to experience like an actor in a play would, similar, because she goes through each season as it comes to her. They're not like Shonda Rhimes isn't just handing her, you know, six seasons or whatever.
Right.
She doesn't know what she's going to go through. So she's changing the character and figuring out like, oh man, we've established for a while that I'm XYZ, but now my character is doing something that's way different, like way outside of what you'd imagine right. her to do. How do I right. adjust to this? So like she gets the experience of like a theatrical actor where it's like, I get to go through different waves of this character. What is this character going through? Like, and even like a person who's doing a play, the same play over and over and over, the way that they ebb and flow and change is their, like they're as the actor's understanding of what it is, right? Because the more right. times you do it, then they're like, oh my God, I've done this 100 times. I didn't even realize this speech was about this, you know?
Like, yes. So you're learning something new about it.
Yeah. And I feel like Kerry Washington in that show, because it was so involved and because it went on for a while and there were so many ups and downs, she had to learn like that too. She had to be like, I didn't know what Olivia Pope was even about until season 4. You know what I mean?
Right. And then we're like, oh, there's a whole new thing. And it mirrors humanity for me. Like that's us as a person. Like when I started watching the show, I was a different person. So you kind of grow with the show and you grow with these characters and experiencing things, you know, as, you know, in your head, in your imagination, as they are. Just like theater, where even in that small little black box over those 2 or 3 hours, we're going through the journey together. And I think there's something about film that offers a distance that I guess when you bring in the camera and you bring in the screen, there's a little bit of a distance. And that to me can be cold because if I can distance myself, I'm not as invested as I could be. So,
yeah, but some filmmakers really like focus on the cold, like Wes Anderson, right. for instance. He's absolutely. A detail man. There's a lot of colors. The characters are like shapes of people. They're not necessarily like real people. Sometimes they are, like right. maybe one or two that's like a deep right. feeling like person, but usually they're just like caricatures, but it's all right. very stylized and it works, you know, like that yeah. wouldn't work in another medium because of the visual that he presents to you. And then like certain setups, even the idea of the long shots that he likes to do where you're like, yes. this is all
and
one
the symmetry,
shot, you know. Yeah, I mean, so
all the symmetry, all yeah. of that.
She's like a different way to do the art, or a different style that's not based on the visceral, emotional connection between characters, but more about like, you know, what the world feels like and looks like. Right. Because I mean, if nothing else, his movies are beautiful.
Beautiful to look at, and yeah. they're. I think at the end of the day, it's about like whoever that artist is, the filmmaker or whoever's in charge of it, to see how do you want people to feel, not like how do I feel while making it. And what I'm noticing now, especially with film, is like I can tell that they were excited about whatever it was, but they didn't want to make us excited about it. Or something like, I don't feel as if it was for me to be excited about. And that could be because, you know, I'm a young black queer man, who knows? So there's not a lot of representation for me anyway, when it comes to screen representation. Sure. So we're speaking in an even more like smaller kind of spectrum when I see something and I'm like, oh, I really love that. Especially in the last 5 years, I'm just like, yeah, you know, it was good. Or, oh yeah, they did their thing. Like I'm speaking about it in individual terms, but not overall. I left it being moved and changed. So that to me has not happened since like Barry Jenkins' Moonlight. Where, yeah, of course, like the representation and all of that, our story is kind of being similar, but also the way it was shot and the way the black bodies were lit, the way that it showed so much beauty in just how they were depicted on screen. That alone is what moved me to tears. That like, I could look as beautiful as someone like Leo DiCaprio, like on screen, like to be archived forever and ever and ever. And now, you know, Oscar award winning, whatever, what have you. So, and, you know, I think he's one of the like people who are still making art that I'm changed by, because he has a tenderness to him that reminds me of theater. So a lot of how he like shoots things, the certain angles he does, like there was a very short scene in If Beale Street could talk, which like the main character rolled up his sleeves, and the way he did that, it was the most sensual, like they were just on a date, but he was like, oh, here, have a seat. And he rolled up his sleeves. And I was like, look at how that's done. It's zoomed, the camera zoomed in, the tones are warm, and there's a human element to it that I have not seen when it comes to me on screen. And so sometimes it's the big stuff and sometimes it's the little stuff like that that makes me like, oh, this is it. Like, this was a great film.
You know, I feel like you mentioned that a lot of times it feels like they're just putting out this idea of like, hey, look at this interesting idea, as opposed to like, you know, be part of this journey with us. Instead, they're like, look at this diorama of a world. And you're like, cool, but I don't care about them. So,
if I don't care, then what's the thing? Like, what does that matter to me?
Yeah.
And then sometimes, you know, I can tell that the filmmaker cares, but there's a balance between like the specificity and universality. Black Panther, Crazy Rich Asians, those two movies work so well and were some of the highest grossing movies ever and reached all these people that even were not from those marginalized communities because they were so specific. Because they were specific tales, even, you know, Wakanda is not a real place, but they did work for years to make sure that it felt like a real place, that the fabric was real, that the languages, the geometric pattern, all of that stuff, the level of detail was accurate. And then you had the people both behind the screen and on the screen who are represented in that to make sure that that truth and that story was given the best and the most like integrity that it could. That's what we respond to. We respond to how specific it is, because then we say, oh, even though I've never been in A, I can feel like this character. There's been times when I feel alone. There's been times when, you know, I've had issues with my father who has never been present. Or there's been times when I feel the responsibilities of a king, even though I'm just an elementary school teacher, you know? So that's what kind of makes those movies tick. And now I feel like a lot of movies are just pandering to everyone and trying to get everybody like, oh, look, this is for everyone. I want to be number one on the box office. I'm going to put this racially ambiguous lead with curly hair, and like, I'm going to appeal to all the demographics. And what that does is now you're like McDonald's. And I don't eat McDonald's. There's a reason why McDonald's is not good for you. There are some who eat it, and you know, I've done it a few drunken nights, but it's not healthy. Versus like, you know, I have to prepare to go to like another place, or I have to cook there. When I cook, like there's love and tenderness made within the meal. And so I taste it. So, yeah, I hope that.
Yeah, but it makes me think, no, you're great. You're great. Don't worry. So you were talking earlier about writing stuff. And one thing that I think happens, like we're talking about, sometimes you watch a movie and it's like, it doesn't quite hit and you're like, don't understand why. Yes, I do think that sometimes there's like lazy networks and film companies that are just making like, you know, generic, this will make everyone happy, like you're saying.
Right.
But I think that sometimes, I think that it's hard. I think that it is actually hard to write a good film and a good television show. And I think that sometimes some things get, like television, you can see when it's been made too fast. You're like, oh, no, that was,
right.
That, no, they needed more time to work on that. That could have been better.
Right.
But with movies, movies take forever. So like they've worked on it a lot. That being said, stories are hard to tell. And then the difference mm-hmm. between the medium of you writing it down and then it being made. First of all, if it's an independent film, then potentially the same person who wrote it has to then communicate how to do it to other people. And that's crazy and weird. And also two different mindsets. But more usually when we see a movie, it's because somebody else bought a script from someone and then took that script and did something to it and then made that mm-hmm. script, which means whoever wrote it, maybe the story they wrote is still there, but maybe the story that they wrote was changed irrevocably by this network or, you know, film company. And then you're watching this movie and it says like, you know, For the Love of Chickens by Joe Smith. And you're like, Joe Smith, I love that guy. He's so great. Awesome. And you watch it and you're like, what is this? This is not Joe's high caliber work. And it's purely because the 27 hands between when Joe wrote it and it got out in the world changed mm-hmm. it, made it different. There were a bunch of people. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's born the bad decisions are sometimes just born out of, hey, it's hard and it's, you know, you're not always going to get the best, you know, editing help from the people around you. Sometimes writing, you know, you second guess yourself a lot when you're writing you know, you could have written the perfect scene and then you're like, nah, I got to change it. And it's like, no, that literally could have made all of America cry in a good
way. And that could have been it. But, and most times your first instinct is usually the one that works. But when film happens, you're going over so many different hands, so many different processes that like the internal vision is harder to keep in like pure. That sounds so terrible, but you know what I mean? Like it's harder to keep that thing that you initially started as, you know, intently the same over all of those different hands. And that's, I wish film had more of like a workshop process to it. Like with theater, you can take it, you can try it out of town, you can get some bad reviews or some good reviews. You can like hire some people and consult and work on this kind of stuff. But with film, usually like once it leaves your hands in the screenwriter's perspective, like once it leaves your hands, it's done.
Yeah.
Like that's you're it. Done. You know? And I wish that it was small things that could still be worked on. Like what I loved about that Sonic process is everyone that Twitter saved the movie, because Twitter was like, hey y'all, Sonic is ugly. And since we are the fans are the ones who are going to watch this, we don't want to look at that blue. I don't know what that is. And so what I loved is like Sony was like, you know what? I bet. We're going to take this and make it a little cuter, make it what our customers want. We're going to take your feedback. We're not going to take it personally. We're going to fix it and release it when it's ready. And they did. And it was much better. And then it did what it needed to do at the box office. So I'm like, I wish more film companies were, you know, a little more like that. I know they lost a lot of money with that, obviously, and everything is about capitalism. But I wish it was a little bit more about the people and actually, you know, reaching who you're trying to reach.
Okay, counterpoint. I think, very unfortunately, letting the whole of the audience, like everybody, like Twitter, tell you how to do it can cause trouble. Example, Game of Thrones. Okay. Bro wrote a bunch of books and everyone was like, yo, those books are great. Put them on this show. We're going to get a bunch of hot people and they're going to act it out. And it's going to be great. And you're going to write some more and finish up that story. And he's like, I got it. Right. And then it took forever. And I swear it's because he was just held back by this idea of like, what do they want? What do they want me to do to end it? How is this going to work? To the point where I don't think that George R.R. Martin actually wrote the end. And some people say, no, he didn't because it was terrible. Maybe he did. Maybe he didn't. It was terrible. Oh. But was it terrible because it was overthought? Was it terrible because people were trying to wrap it up and the story wasn't supposed to wrap up? Like, stories don't have to end with, like, and that's how everyone's life is perfect from now on. And, like, nope, doesn't have to work out that way. Like, also, in a show where you've killed, like, more than half of the leads, why are you trying to make us happy at the end? That's not what we want. That's not what we want. Kill off and half of these people. Everyone that's left, why aren't they dead? This is the last episode. If everyone's not dead, why? You know, like, because that was the allure of that show, right? But instead, it became this weird thing where, like, they listened to the, oh, the audience says this and da-da-da, oh, maybe this, you know. And it was just all, it felt like the last season felt like it was done based on, like, votes from, like, American Idol. Like, it was like, what do you think? Oh. Should they get together? Vote now.
Right.
And then it's like, oh, they said they whatever. You know, it's like,
That's true. I can definitely see that side of it, too, is, like, sometimes if it becomes too much about the crowd control, then the art is not in it. It becomes... the McDonald's.
Yeah.
So I guess it's about a fine balance. It is. It's about that balance of, like, fulfilling the need or whatever you're trying to do, but also the vision.
Well, also, like, people like George R.R. Martin should never be allowed to look at social media. Like, just write wherever you gotta write. Should we find a villa for you in Scotland for you to gaze upon?
I was gonna say, go to Scotland or like New Zealand and do your cottage thing.
Yeah, like, just like look outside and think about all the elves and the creatures and what that might make them happy. Like, it's not about Hollywood, right? But it was, you know? So what are you writing? Like, what are you working on? You mentioned that you went to college for theater. So you have a theater degree.
I did.
Me too. It's very helpful in life.
Isn't it? Right.
It's super cool. But like, you know, you also mentioned that you had to study pilots. Was that in school or is that like recently while you're working on writing TV pilots?
Yeah, so I went to school for musical theater and playwriting, which, like, learning plays and kind of learning the structure of writing plays, I would often rub elbows with a lot of communications majors who wrote screenplays. So I, like, dibbled and dabbled a little bit on campus at Howard in screenwriting, and I knew I loved television. But I was like, no, I think I'm just a playwright. Like, I don't know if I can do... you know, just that. And then I saw Katori Hall, who's like an amazing playwright. She got this huge TV deal to do TV writing. And I was like, wait. And I looked it up and all of my favorite playwrights were also TV writers. And I was like, oh, so I can do that too? Like, wait. So
you can do whatever you want. Once you know that,
right? I just, you know, sometimes I feel like you have to get the divine permission to do stuff sometimes. I don't know if that's because society tells you so or because of my specific socioeconomic groups, all of those things.
No, I think everyone thinks that, honestly.
Yeah, it's just like I'm waiting on that, like, Amazon package to come and be like, you can now do what you want. So I really have always had ideas for TV shows and I've always written them, but I've never known the structure of it. So once I got serious about, you know, like, oh, learn how to actually write a screenplay. Like, oh, how do you develop a pilot? What is a 1-hour drama? What is a 30-minute sitcom? All of those things. And that's something that I've been self-teaching and YouTubing and masterclassing and all of that stuff for 3 years now. And I've developed 3 pilots, 2 1-hour dramas and 1 kind of web series format. And they're weird. Like, one is a comedy, one's an action drama about harvesting organs. Because I'm really, like, obsessed with true crime meets science fiction. So I've created my own little, like, fusion of those. And of course, again, racism. You got to throw that in there. So it's just really cool. And, like, I was like, no one's ever going to make this. Like, I don't even know why I'm writing this. And then HBO did Lovecraft Country. And I was like, wait, this could I might actually. Okay. So since that's been out, I've been seriously developing my pilot, developing my paper pitch and all of those things. And I'm going to start, you know, trying to get a little more serious with representation sometime next year and copywriting and all the official stuff and joining all the unions and all of that. But now I'm still in the, like, the research phase. So I'm like, what is my artistic aesthetic as a screenwriter? And what shows am I drawn to? Like, the stuff that I've done for theater, now I'm doing for TV. And it's like, I'm in a whole second puberty. Literally.
Well, you brought it up, audience. He said it, so I'm going to have to tell him. I have a theory. I have a theory of life, and I talk about it in every episode, and I'm sure the people that listen are like, Amy, just don't let it go. Nope.
They're like, dang it, it was his time.
He's like, oh. No. So I have this theory of 18 years. Like, I think that every 18 years, you become a new person, right? So, like, 0 to 18, you're your parents' kid. You do what your parents say. You do whatever. You grow up and you're under somebody else's thumb. Like, you don't make really all your own decisions. And most of the end of that is about getting away from all these people who are trying to tell you what to do and find your own place, right? 18.
Right.
We either leave the nest and go to college, or we leave the nest and we get a job or whatnot. Mm-hmm. But by 18, we're like ready to be somebody else. From 18 to 36, you get to become adult you. You get to figure out all your things. You get to figure out what you like, how you do it. You go through all the things you need to go through. And by the end, you've had enough life experience that you can make decisions for yourself in an experiential way, as opposed to, like, when you're 18 and you're like, I'm going to do it this way. And you're like, sure, but you've never had that experience. But by 36, you've had most experiences. And if you haven't, and it occurs to you and someone is like, hey, did you know this was a thing that happens in real life? You're like, oh, what? Right. And you can deal with it, but in an adult way, as opposed to a child way, which is like, you know, either denial or like, well, that doesn't affect me.
Oversaturation.
So then 36. So then I think you have more renaissance, like 36 to 54, you become a new person as well. Right. Mm-hmm. A lot of times 36 to 54 is when people's kids have left their nest. Right. So they had kids and then their kids leave. Mm-hmm. And now they're like, well, who am I? This is often a period of time when people do things like cheat on their spouses, get divorces, buy sports cars, grasp too hard to their youth. That's what happens, because there's no like cool group that's like geared towards 36 to 54 year olds. It's like, you know how you live your life cool? Let me tell you, there's nowhere that they're telling you that. Right. And then once you get older, everything after 54, it's just sort of like, hey, so you're dead now, but really you're not. You're a person, and then you have another one, right? So then, like, 54, oh, math is hard. 54 to 72, 54 to 72, right? You're making that because, like, most of us are gonna, I mean, I'm gonna make it to 72. I don't know about you, but definitely, like, genetics wise, for sure. And so, like, what's that about? That's like, what? Like, right now, I'm in third round. But I'm early on, right? I'm early on in my third round. I'm in my early 40s. So I don't know, right? But you and I are kind of in the same point, right? So, like, you're 7 years into your journey, right? I'm 6 years into mine, right? But we're in a similar, like, trying to figure out, like, what's this thing? Because I'm doing the same thing you are. Like, oh, I've done a lot of this, but how am I going to, you know, what's my new take on it? Like, I studied this a lot. I've done a lot of this, but now how do I use that knowledge that I have to learn something new? To maybe what I learned was to facilitate my work in, like, we're talking about television writing, right? You know, like, maybe what you learned up till now literally set you up. You had to be a playwright. You had to learn all this theater to be the best TV writer you could be, right? Like,
right.
So I don't know. That's my, and that's what that's I'm my hoping. Theory of that's, life.
I love that theory because I did feel this change, even like a little bit before the pandemic, but especially in this year where I'm like, something's happening. Like because I think there's a curiosity now that I have created during this pandemic where I haven't been curious about art in a while because, you know, I've been doing this for a while. And so, you know, like after a while, there's nothing new under the sun. And I think screenwriting and especially TV writing proves a different challenge. And I love to be challenged. Like I love to not know how to do something. So then I can get frustrated, like, and do the whole thing and then suddenly fail or not fail and be like, okay, great. And that's kind of what my process is. Like I gotta get frustrated and go through it in order to really learn it because, you know, that was theater, that was dance, that was song, all the stuff that I know how to do. So now I think there's been a change when I think now I'm wanting to do a little bit more on the TV side. And I'm hoping what you said is right. Like I'm hoping all my experience, Lord, is gonna prove itself useful. That's my hope. I will say that, like, I think I'm good. I mean, I hope that's not weird to say, but I think I'm good. I think I have something. And now I think it's just my job to learn more and more how to do it on purpose and not on accident.
I think it's good that you think that you're good. I think it's important. You know what I mean? Like if you can have the confidence to keep going, I mean, yeah. that will help. You know, so many yeah. people are held back by their own negative self-talk. If you can,
yes.
you know, put the kibosh on that and be in your own head being like, I'm great at this and, you know, I'm working towards this. Maybe this thing I'm working on isn't ready yet, but it will be.
Right.
And I'm great at this. And at the end of the day, movies and TV get made not because they're actually the best, most well-written thing, but because a confident right. person swung in and was like, hi, you know what you want to buy? My script. Let me tell you all
yeah.
about it. And they're like, it's more like about like
doing it, like faking your way to the top, like to quote Dreamgirls, faking your way to the top, you know, because just like, you know, we were saying this earlier, there are so many people who really just don't know what they're doing. And I was under the impression that, like, I had to go to film school and I had to do this and I have to do that. And what I'm learning is things are much more gray than I thought. You know, the things that I'm drawn to, those people didn't necessarily go to school for that. Or that sensibility is not something that's taught. That's something that is instinctual that you can't really replicate. So I'm hoping that, like, I can still get to know versions of myself as I'm learning this new medium.
You know what's interesting about what you just said too? You were talking, you said some people haven't taken, you know, don't have the education, they haven't put the investment in there. They're just yeah. like happen to be great. And then they like show up and you're like, oh, okay. It,
yeah.
You, in this journey, like in the full life journey of being an artist, I think some people are just like that. They've never taken a class in their life. They walk in, they're just amazing at it. And you can't like hate that, you know, I mean, you can, right. but like you shouldn't, because it's like, it's more about this person's like magic lining up, you know, it just kind of all yeah, worked out timing. In this moment. It's not like, and here's the other thing too. I've taught a lot of actors. Sometimes the actors that are the best are not the actors that want to do this for a job.
Yep.
You know,
exactly.
Like
usually most, and that's the bad part is I do try to like find as on the directing side, I do try to find those that are organic. And sometimes school can ruin you. Sometimes you go to these different arts institutions and they are drilling the essence of what makes you a star out of you. Cause they're like, you have to be this. And if you're not that, then you're going to do all you can to become that. And as much as I love Howard, like early on, I didn't look like a lot of the other guys in my class. I was short and like stout and a little chubby when everyone else was like these tall, slender-esque dancer types. And one of the professors made a comment like, I had a leading man's talent in a supporting role's body. Ugh. And I just went, So I went through a lot. I did have a little bit of an eating disorder because I was trying to starve myself because I wanted to be smaller. I was like, only eat certain things so I wouldn't gain any weight. All of this crazy stuff to try to be these other people. And after a while, I just got so tired and like, not even like spiritually tired. Like I was literally not sleeping. So after a while, I was like, I can't be them. I gotta be me. And I took myself to bed. I took a nap and I just kind of was like, look, you're either with it or you're not. And then turns out then the professors really responded to that confidence. They responded to like my rebellion of not trying to fit in to what everyone else looked like and their ideas of a leading man. So it's just so weird how this industry works. It's so strange.
Well, I mean, the world in general. I mean, how many people, when you like meet somebody who's rebellious, who like wants to do their own thing, it's like, oh, mm-hmm. I'm drawn to that person. That's fascinating and amazing. But in real life, in the actual existence, you have to do a lot of rules. There's just a lot of crap you got to do that's like, I don't love this. This is not something I want to do, but I have to do it. You know, like
to survive or to whatever, or to sustain or
just like
or
regular
whatever.
Life. Like one thing that we're constantly teaching, well, maybe not these days, but back when we could all be near each other, when we were in long lines with my child, we'd be like, this is a line. You wait in them a lot. You have to deal with it and there's no way to get out of it. So just be fine. And if you're upset, that's your problem and no one else's. Like waiting in a line
it's teaching patience.
Yeah, you just
it's a different thing too, because I know that's a generational thing too. I have younger siblings that are like 16 and 18. And I remember waiting in line with them and just the griping and the complaining. And I'm like, how are you going to be when you get to college, when you're in the registration line and everyone has to register or everyone has to pay a bill or whatever? This is part of life. Like you're going to have lines, you're going to have traffic, you're going to go through stuff. And, you know, somehow in the arts, we've tried to make things simpler and simpler and simpler that I think sometimes we shoot ourselves in the foot. We think that everything is going to be easy and it's going to be a cakewalk. And no, this is not. I told my friend this. I was like, if I could be a marketing person or a freaking day trader or even the little people that work the toll at booths, like I would do it. But I know that I literally cannot do anything else. Like it would one, eat me alive. But two, I probably just wouldn't be good at it. The one time I did try to have a regular job, like it just didn't go well. It didn't go well.
I feel like you were about to tell me details and then you were like, thought better of it. And you were like, I'm not going to bring that up. You're like,
I really won't. It's such a long story, but just know that like, I am not a salesman. I'm an actor. They are not one and the same.
Yes. Oh my God. I can't tell you the number of jobs I got where they were like, great, you're in sales. And I was like, I don't think that's the right thing for me.
I'm not in sales. I mean, I guess I sell you a story, but even then it's not that transactional. Like you're doing stuff for me too. I don't know. It's just, it never really works out. And now, you know, as I'm teaching, cause I teach here and there too. And I'm usually teaching like high school ages. So they're just at the brink where they're trying to figure out like, what's my purpose? What am I here for? And I try to say like, look, if you work plan A so hard, you don't need a plan B. Society tells you, oh, well, get a plan B, do this. No, like there's always plan A and there's little like subsections of plan A, you know, or you want to be an actor. Okay, great. Well, what are you going to do to have a part-time job? What are you going to do to sustain that? Or how are you going to get to auditions? All of those things. As long as acting is your A, it's always going to work out. The universe, whatever you believe in, is always going to see to it that if you put the hard work in, it's going to pay off.
Even can I just say that I don't understand why they don't say that to everyone of all jobs? Like, how are you gonna pay your rent? What are you gonna do? Just because he went to law school doesn't mean he knows how to accomplish a task. Like,
that is so true. Like, they think that we don't know how to, like, regular problem solve.
Right?
Like,
I'll tell you what.
I don't know.
The people who I know, we were talking before we started recording about how, like, during the pandemic, it has really changed the way that theater has, like, been done, because it's not happening right now. And so a lot of people are quitting, and a lot of people are, you know, shuttering their doors and stuff like that. But it's like, guys, we've been ready for this all along. You've been telling us you didn't like us forever. So now when the whole world is like, by the way, you can't do it anymore. And you're like, yeah, I've been told that. No problem.
Yeah. You're not going to scare me away. I can wait. And
I've done
if
this.
Anything, I'm going to use this time to train and get even more smarter and more intentional about what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. So,
I'm practiced at being poor. So,
jokes I'm on already you. Poor. Like, I've got the clothes for, I got everything ready for my poor outfits.
It's
in my moments.
Yeah.
So I am good. And what's so funny, at the beginning of this pandemic, everyone was like calling me like, oh, Ulrich, oh, I heard the arts are shutting down. I know your theater company, how are you in Sankofa doing? And I'm like, I mean, it's going to be hard, but we'll be back. And if we won't, we won't. But that doesn't mean like I individually will stop working. I know that, you know, I'm going to tell stories, even if I'm just like that little homeless guy with a cup and a piece of paper. It's going to be like the ballad of the tin cup, because it's what I'm here to do. And you're not going to scare me away from that as much as you try, because what I often find out is those are just people who wanted to do what you did and didn't have the courage or the resources or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like usually doing their own way of, if I bring you down about your thing, I'm going to feel better about my thing.
Yeah, totally. All the people posting about how theater was non-essential are 100% sad in their own jobs. Like,
yeah,
I'm
they
sorry
hate it. And they're
that
like,
you don't like
oh,
your
I
life.
Did theater when
don't
I was a kid.
Harass me.
Like, right. Like, let me be happy. Yes, I'm sometimes poor, but I'm good. Like, I am happy. There are like, a number of people who have made sure that I'm okay as far as food, clothing, and shelter is fine. So all of that stuff, I'm good. That's really essential to me, is getting back to the basics of what do I need to succeed and like thrive. I don't need all that stuff. I don't need all that stuff. What are the basics? And so this has helped with that.
Plus, what does theater provide if not community? Right? You're absolutely right. My people, the people who we've helped each other, we've checked up on each other during all this, all theater people, like all my people who are, you know, just working on stuff, like known them for many years. It's funny, too. It's like after college, you all of a sudden become friends with somebody that like went to your college, but like you never really knew them. And then you're like, oh, man, how are we best friends all of a sudden? Why weren't we best friends then? And I feel like the pandemic has done the same. Like the people that I've ended up being like connected with and talking with the most, I'm like, man, why didn't we talk more before this? Like, why? This is so weird, you know? So I don't know.
And you've realized that you've given some attention to people who like should not get it. Had to cut someone off too. I've literally at the beginning of this, I had to cut someone from my friend circle because I was like, hold on, you're not a good person. And something about like me now no longer being busy and no longer just ripping and running all the time really made me realize that I did not like my friend. And if that were the case, why were they always around me? Why did I do that to myself? And I found myself making myself smaller for them and around them. And that's, why would I want anyone like that? So this pandemic has also been disruptive in a good way too. It really, really has.
Yeah. I mean, even you mentioned that you hadn't had time to work on your own projects, and now you've been able to write a ton of stuff. Tell me more about the theater that you were working on that sounds like sadly is on hiatus, like all live theater. But like, what was keeping you busy?
So I started the theater company. It was started as the Bayou Theater Company. And then we've since changed our name to the Sankofa Collective. And it's a nonprofit theater company. Sankofa is a West African word that means go back and get it. So the word itself means to return to the roots of why we do theater. And for us, that's about community. And that's about, you know, being griots, oral storytellers. So I'm preserving history and telling history through these stories. And we like art that starts conversations. Sometimes it's disruptive. Sometimes it's really funny and kooky, whatever. But what I like to do is the art that like you talk about for weeks on, not something like you just chew up and spit out. So we were 17, me and my two best friends, and we noticed that all of the like great risky work that high schoolers could get away with, the Houston theaters were not doing. Like at large, it was mainly like fluff musicals, big blockbuster hits and like touring shows at that time. You know, this was 2013. So there wasn't a lot of cutting edge, biting work, and especially for younger audiences. And then even more so for people of color. So we were like, let's start a theater company. We banded with a lot of our parents, our friends' parents. We researched all this stuff about nonprofits and 501c3s and all this. And we started doing shows. And our first show was Fences by August Wilson. I directed it. And I wrote a play called Gems. And we did that. And since then, we've just kind of done maybe two or three shows a year. And it's been 8 years now. And what I like about that is a lot of the people we've worked with have been empowered enough to start their own companies or go and start film or move to Atlanta or go to DePaul or Howard or Cal Arts or wherever. And
that's great.
For us, that's what it's about. It's telling people that like, you can have a career in this, because that's something that I didn't know. I really didn't know I could have a career in the arts, because when I was born, you know, everyone's like, well, just make sure you have that, or make sure, you know, and I'm trying to say, well, if I'm a dentist and then maybe I can do this on the side. And then I was 9 years old and I saw The Lion King. And like, I just remember being in the audience being like, I never want to do anything else in my life other than this. Like, I have to do this specific thing, because it was transformative. It was spiritual. It needed the audience just like we needed the performers. And I love that kind of reciprocal energy about it. So, you know, since then I've kind of been creating experiences, whether I'm directing or writing or producing or even sometimes acting in it. And now I'm kind of like, because of the pandemic, we're doing a few COVID concerts. Like, we'll do a concert virtually. We did a one woman show, and next year we're doing a show. So it's like, we're sort of testing out a new medium of blending theater and film together and finding ways to make that accessible while still creating like something that's high quality. And it's not something that's really done often, because usually it's either super expensive and like the production is amazing or not. So we're trying to find the medium and continue to grow. So that's what's keeping me busy. Also individually, like I'm working on my screenwriting. So I've really been empowered during this time by leaning into my own voice as far as writing goes and being confident and not knowing like what I'm doing. That's okay. It's okay not to be the best at everything once you start.
It's also okay not to have everything figured out by 25. I wish I could have told you that. I'm not learning in May,
that. I really do. I do. I was like, oh God, I literally almost had a panic attack the morning I woke up and was 25 because I've just always been that type of person of I have to have things organized. It has to be this. It has to be that. And I guess it's because my grandma, she was a substitute teacher. And so we used to drill vocabulary words and read books until like 10 p.m. And we were just super like scholarly in that way. And she would always tell me, you have to be the best in the room. White, black, any otherwise, you have to be the best in the room. Good, better, best. Never let it rest until your good is better and your better is best. That was like my mantra growing up. Wow. So see, you see, like I can spit it out because I literally had to say it like 5 times a day.
Oh my God.
But yeah, what that did is like it gave me a great work ethic and a great discipline to my art. But in that, sometimes I get so caught up in the routine that I lose my heart. So I think the pandemic has helped me go back to those roots of like, why do I like to do this? What do I want to say? Like, who cares what I have to say? Oh, me? Oh, that's good enough. Oh, okay, great. So I'm also writing a rock album.
like you're a rock musician or like a rock musical.
So I was in a band at Howard, my university. And we did like R&B rock, you know, I would write the songs and sing, but I've never really just done anything that's like a solo work for music myself. I've always done musicals or played different characters. And I found myself like in this pandemic, I've been learning a lot of like meditation techniques and journaling. And I have so much to say that's like angsty and vulnerable and like deep that I've just been holding in. And I'm like, I'm going to make music. So then I've been singing and writing songs that are rock songs. And I'm like, am I making a rock album? So in the last like 6 weeks, I've been preparing to start writing and working on a rock EP that I'm going to release sometime, probably next summer.
Whoa. Do you have like, do you like play all the instruments and like,
I sing and write, and then I have friends who play the instruments. Wow. So they have, you know, they've thankfully like volunteered their time, as well as my uncle. He was a former musician, so he can do all of the things. And I have like an ear where I can record certain melodies and harmonies in my phone and like, hey, play this. And then I'll write that down, whatever they say. Or I'm like, hey, is this in the right key or does it sound good? You know, so I'm usually writing things from my ear and then building stuff off of that. So I plan to just do like a small self project, something next summer where I'm just like going for it, like balls to the wall. Breaking the box of what Ulrich is, you know, and just doing it.
Yeah. It makes me think of when you first said a rock band, I thought rock musical, like, and I just purely because of what we've been talking about. But I was like, oh, yeah, you know, like a musical, but like the music isn't like musical stuff like Oklahoma.
Right.
It's like. Right. Oh, this is a rock song now, you know, like yeah. Rent was sort of the first one of those, but like,
exactly.
But like, you know, hey, maybe it could be. You write the whole album and then you could turn it into the story of the guy.
Which could very well be a thing. I kind of write from that storytelling perspective anyway. I also have a background in slam poetry. So I include a lot of like slam poetry in that. I teach slam poetry classes. And a lot of these poems are like angsty and like dark. And I was like, where is this coming from? Is this inside of me? So I'm just like, I gotta do something with this stuff. And I was talking to my friend and she's like, you are always playing these characters, but you've never played yourself. And when she said that, I was just like, oh, she's kind of reading me for filth. Like, she's right. Like, I'm, you know, I'm always in musicals or I'm always doing someone else's thing, but it takes a different level of vulnerability to put out a solo project and to be an artist and to tell my story. And that excites me even more because it's scary. It's something that I haven't done yet. So
I'm really excited for that challenge.
Yeah. I mean, why not? Like, again, like there's this thing in the back of your head that waits on this, you should do, you know, and I'm just no longer going to listen and wait for that thing. I'm just going to go for it.
No, there's no thing. Like there's no one who's going to send you a box that says, hey, you can do it now. There's no one that's going to call you and say it's okay. You just have to keep
doing it. I'm waiting
on
the Amazon delivery from like, no. God, I used to have dreams about it when I was little where like God would write me a letter and I would like open the letter and it would like drop, you know, on the Acme TV, like the Looney Tunes or something, they open the scroll and it's so long. That's what I would think my letter of like how to run life would be. And I think during this time I learned like, that's not how it works. You just go for it. You try to be the best person you can be. You try to be the best artist you can be and just, you know, go for it.
Yeah. I mean, you just have to do it. At the end of the day, artists are the people who do it. Whether or not they're good or not, it doesn't matter. That's not the point.
You know, I'm like, super even interesting? If it's crappy.
Yeah, exactly. Or even if it's crappy now. Like, for instance, think about like Vincent Van Gogh. Bro, legitimately, not once in his life did anyone say the stuff he did was great. They were like, this is crap, Vinny. What are you doing? He dies and they're like, oh my God, did you know that Vincent could paint? Like, legit happened. So he never got to know. He doesn't know that he's like the biggest name, that like I'm hundreds of years in the future and I know about him. Right? He doesn't know. Some people are like that. Sometimes the work that you do has to take time. Sometimes it's words and sometimes it's painting, music. Sometimes it takes a while and then people are like, hey, did you guys see this?
Right. Have you heard of this guy? And that's the thing is, I want to think about legacy and be more intentional about if I were to leave this earth, you know, because we don't know how long we have. I mean, I'm not to be bleak, but seriously. And I want to leave something that I would be proud of. And I had just been noticing in our seasons that I'm planning and like all these things I'm doing. On the producer side, I was doing a few things that it was a little safe. And I was like, wait, okay, let's go back to stuff that scares me. Let's go back to stuff that excites me in the way that why we started this company and why I individually wanted to start writing or directing or whatever it may be. And then
I feel like you need to find somebody who doesn't like what you do, somebody who really thinks it's a bad idea, and then bring them ideas. And if they gasp, that's the one you do. You know what I mean?
I should do it. I need a tester of like an old crotchety uncle. I probably have several who I'm like, hey, I'm doing this. And they're like, and I'm like, yep, that means I should do it.
Or someone who's like, how dare you? People like that shouldn't have. And you're like, oh, well, we're going to have 12
it's
of
been
these
a thing.
Now
it's like when I directed Midsummer at Rice, someone made the comment of like, oh, why is he directing Shakespeare when he's young? He doesn't know what he's doing. First, you don't know me. You've never even seen this because at the time we had just opened. So like no one had seen the show yet. And the community, it was a few people in the community, were just saying that I was too young and I did not deserve to direct something as sacred as Midsummer from Shakespeare.
Oh my God, are you kidding me right now?
Right,
Shakespeare's
like literally
like a bro doing like dick and poop jokes, and we've elevated him to like amazingness. Like, are you kidding me?
Let's not forget, Shakespeare was the original reality show. I love reality TV. That's one of my escapes. I'm not proud of it, but it's my thing. And I have a taste for high art and I have a taste for reality TV. And in that, I know that like it's just as epic as Shakespeare. Like, it's the same thing. He wrote it for those tomato throwers in the front, not the super upper crust people at the top who like could barely hear the shit. Yeah. So, you know, yeah, it's just weird that I'm considered disruptive.
Total total sidebar, reality TV is theater on television.
Absolutely. And that's probably why I love it. It is so large. Like,
it's just the only way that you can figure things out as it comes, right? And yes. It's built out of what the audience thinks of it. Because, like, say, like a Bachelorette kind of show, right? They film like 100 hours and show us two, right? Which means somebody went through and picked and created a story from the information that they were given, right? That idea is the most fascinating. Like,
and it's something for us to know that, like, on top of that, it's how we feel about the characters. That's part of what makes reality TV is like, oh, I don't like her, but oh, I love her. Oh, I don't like him, but I like them. And that's kind of what we do to theater. We always, as we're seeing a show in the theater, we're already like, we choose our player. Like, we pick the person we're going to relate to and follow through the story, even if you don't know you're doing it.
No, but so, that's also what I'm saying about the whole Shakespeare is reality TV thing, is that the editor tells you what to think, right? Reality TV, there's an editor, there's a person who chooses to put these clips together to make you think Tina's a bitch, right? Oh my God, I can't believe Tina's going to do it. Oh, she's been telling us she was going to do it for weeks and now she's going to do it, right? Same with Shakespeare. Shakespeare sets it up. He has like six guys up top where he's all like, hey, have you seen this beautiful lady? Man, it's going to be crazy when she falls in love. Hey, have you seen this lady? Yeah. Nobody wants her to fall in love, but she's gonna. Oh my God. Here's the girl. Look at her. She's about to walk in and fall in love. Like, they're telling you what's up. Like, in the most direct, like, silly, like, yeah. Whenever people hold Shakespeare to this, like, ridiculous high standard. I mean, I went to a college where it was so obsessive that they, like, did not want us to, like, do anything. Like they don't want us to do anything but Shakespeare. And it was like, I need to learn other things. Like, I am not going to I didn't come to college to become a Shakespeare scholar. I want to do theater, and I'm interested in doing active, alive theater, not this, like, old school stuff in this old school way. If we want to do it in a real way, like Shakespeare should be done by, like, Seth Rogen. You know what I mean?
Like I want, what's the new take in it?
And, like,
what's fresh?
Boobs and, like, crazy people and, like, drunk guys in cars. That's Shakespeare.
Absolutely.
Like,
they used to tell us in high school, and, you know, going, I guess, again, going to a black school, they were like, oh, no, Shakespeare's not for you. You can't watch that. You can't read that. And I'm like,
in school?
Well, yes. And I'm like, okay, but it's for me in English class. So why isn't it for me in theater? And then I get to Howard and they're like, oh, why are you not trained in Shakespeare? And I'm like, what? What is Texas? It's weird. So, you know, I think overall there's a fear of it, especially with people of color, because it's like, oh, well, I'm not quote unquote smart enough to deal with some of these concepts or to reckon with some of these stories. Like, we don't feel the same things, if not more, because of the disparities that we're usually at.
Bro's so writing, like, a show because he needed cash. He needed cash. Literally. Like, yeah.
And it's literally all of that stuff. Like, you cannot tell me Julius Caesar is not as, like, epic as a reality TV showdown, you know? And we did Midsummer, and I said it in, like, the jazz era in Harlem. And I added, like, modern songs that were redone in these jazz interpretations. So with stuff like Genuine's You're a Hornet, Let's Do It, Potty My Pony, but in, like, these jazzy little tunes. And people kept, like, leaning in, like, what? Can he do that? We did Drake's Hotline Bling, and they were like, huh? They were looking in the program like, oh, my God. And I'm like, yeah, it's, you know, like, who cares? Like, you can do that. And after they got off the, like, initial tension, it was a great experience, and they loved it and clapped and cheered and laughed. And I was like, yeah, you just have to suspend your disbelief, because at the end of the day, none of this stuff is real anyway.
Yeah. And, you know, you have to, it's almost like we were talking about earlier about how, like, in movies, they're trying to make it like McDonald's, where it's like,
yeah,
they're trying to make it for everybody. Shakespeare, right. that's why they think Shakespeare's the king, because everybody went to go see it. So they think, we know that in the globe, everybody from all socioeconomic strata were there and they were hanging out with each other. So this must actually be because of the art. And it was like, no, there was no other thing to look at. They were just like,
couldn't go anywhere else.
I'm either going to sit at home or I can go watch a bunch of people do a show for me. I'm going to go. Right. And so absolutely. The rich people were there. The poor people were there. It didn't matter. Like, everyone was there, but not because it was high art, but because it was the art. Like, it just, you know, I don't know. I love Shakespeare and all, but I really just think that they hold him to a way too high a standard, right?
And I do.
It's almost similar to what we were talking about, where it was like the Vincent van Gogh thing, like, except for opposite, because Shakespeare was alive during some of his
success. Famous,
being famous, he was aware of, right? So I'm sure later plays were influenced by what people wanted. You know what I mean? It gets created based out of that, right? As opposed to, here are just some basic stories, or here are stories that we all know that I'm going to retell. That's the other thing, that people like act like he made up every story in the world. And like Disney too. You know that like 90% of early Disney movies are like old stories that they co-opt because they were public domain, like,
and royalty free public domain stuff, or like folk tales that no one really ever knows who wrote it.
Right.
So that's where the essence of that stuff comes from, and yet we put it to this like elitist, this hold it to this higher standard and say that, oh well, you're not allowed to direct this or touch this or engage with this, when honestly, it's just, if I can live it, I can do it. So if I can live this heartache and this death and this, you know, whatever it is, then I can do it on stage or off or wherever, what have you. It's so weird. People have to, there's a group, like, I think it's Decolonize Shakespeare or something like that. And they focus on putting Shakespeare like more in the mouths of people and all of that stuff. And I like that kind of work, again, because it demystifies what belongs to who, and do I deserve to be in the room, and all that kind of stuff.
I just really, it breaks my heart so deeply that anyone would have told you that Shakespeare wasn't for you. Shakespeare's for everyone. Yes. Even Billy Shakes himself would say that. And like, just the idea of holding back any art from anyone. I'm sorry. We are human beings. Like, do I have to Merchant of Venice you? Like, come on. We all have the same, like, eyes to look at the beauty. We all have the same ears to hear the music. Like you can't say that any playwright is not for anybody, because it is. And in fact, most of the playwrights, as they wrote stuff, I mean, I'm sure there's a handful of people that were like, well, I certainly hope this group of people doesn't like this, but I you know, they're not around anymore, so whatever.
Right.
And also, like, I just really dislike, like, I've just, since you've said it, I just keep thinking about this idea of a teacher telling anyone that art was not for them, or you feeling like doors were closed to you. And the conversation that we've been having about how, you know, you're expecting there to be some sort of like someone to give you permission to do it. Guys, people who are listening right now, I want you to know, no one's going to give you permission. And you know why? Because you don't need it. You can do whatever you want. You can create whatever you want. You can say whatever words that you would like, as long as, you know, legality stuff. Sure. Absolutely. You're going to do a play, pay for the rights. Done. You did it.
Right.
You got it. Like, there's nothing that's
you don't have
to
be good at it. Like, it's to be bad, or like okay or good or great. Like, I used to think I had to be the greatest at every single thing the first time I tried it, because, you know, that's what society does. It's and then especially now with the social media culture and everything like that, there's so much pressure riding on you to be great and to show the picture perfect version of everything you do. Me and my friends have this thing where like, I'm proud to announce. So we make fun of people who say like, I am so proud to announce, because usually that's like their own social media version of a press release. So we're like, did you check the proud to announce it today? They're like, no, I didn't check the proud to announce it today, because it's, you know, now it's become this thing that's inauthentic, and it's more about the buzz and the excitement of the project than the actual project itself. And I don't want it to be that anymore. Like, let's fail. Let's fail really epically. It's okay to take a big swing. And, you know, as long as we're playing the game. So that's what this pandemic has taught me even more than anything. And to that person, to that those comments about me directing the show, I ain't see you in the show. So, period. I'm just saying. I'm just saying, everyone else loved it and laughed. And one lady came back and brought her husband. So, you know, I think mission accomplished.
That husband was like, what? What am I going to see? Oh, Shakespeare?
He was like, what? Midsummer with song. He was like, my wife brought me back. I was like, did y'all? Clearly she liked it. And he enjoyed it. He tapped his foot along. But, you know, he's probably not a theater guy. But she was like, hi, I just had to tell you, you did your thing with this. And I was like, thank you, you know, because again, when people feel like they're having a good time or they're feeling seen or whatever, that lets me know I did my job. Like, even if I just did just that, that's okay. You know, I don't have to get the Tony or the all of that. You know, it's about reaching actual people, flesh and blood people. So
yeah. It's about that lady being so excited that she wanted to share it with her husband, who maybe didn't want to share it, but she brought him anyway, and he loved her enough to go. Like,
right, just, and they had an evening together.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
It's cute.
It's cute. I've had a lot of little testimonials like that remind me of, like, why I love to do this.
Yeah. I'm so glad that you've gotten good feedback, but... to what you were saying, like, just because a show gets a lot of people, you know, like all the people trying to promote this show, oh, sell a lot of tickets, doesn't necessarily make it good or bad, right? I think at the end of the day, the thing that makes something good is the heart, the intention. Right. If the people care, if they really want to do it, you know, maybe it sells a lot of tickets, maybe it doesn't. And in the harsh capitalistic world that we live in doing theater, you know, how many tickets it sells and how much money it makes does make final decisions, but that doesn't actually preclude it from being good art or from affecting a human being who watched it, you know, like, and changing their life. They could have been completely like, I'd never seen Shakespeare before, but now I've read everything. I mean, who knows?
Yeah. We've had so many stories like that. You know, we're typically making our prices lower so that if you're coming to a Sankofa Collective show, you can afford to. Like, you can afford to see theater, because usually theater ticket prices are so expensive. And what that does is we get so many people who saying, I've never seen a play before, but now I'm going to see more theater. Or when we did The Mountaintop, we had one kid who was like, I watched this show and I realized Martin Luther King made so much of a sacrifice that, like, I should do a better job in my math class. And I was like, yeah, that's why we do this. Yes. We do Next to Normal, a play about, you know, a musical about bipolar disorder. And one of the women comes to me and is like, you put this on for me. And now I'm going to start seeing a therapist. To me, that lets me know that we're doing the thing we need to do.
Yeah.
So we may not be like overflowing in the big budgets. No, we're not Ally with the Tony. No. But like, the reason why we keep chugging on and have been for these little bitty 8 years is because of those things, those voices from the universe that come to you. That's like, hey, keep going, keep pursuing this trail, whatever it is, wherever it leads, keep going. Cause there's a light at the end of this tunnel.
Plus, like we were talking about with the pandemic, people need this. People need storytelling more than anything that we've needed before. Now we need to figure out how to process. And storytelling is how we process. And if we don't like figure it out in our own way, then we're just not going to figure it out. And it's going to fester and go terribly wrong. But it won't, because all of the artists have been given this like clean slate of creation. And it's like, whatever you were working on before, well, it's over now. So try something else. And this, you know, you are now going to see who your audience is live and in real time all the time.
Right.
What do they need from you?
And now I can see a little bit more. Who, what does the community need? Mm-hmm. Who is really like a real supporter and who are moved by certain stories that we're making? Mm-hmm. And it was the community that pulled me out of that depression and anxiety at the beginning of this. We had four shows scheduled that I was brilliant. I mean, I had planned that stuff for years and it was this and this budget and this person was coming out of town and all of this. And now all of that was gone. And so I was so hurt and depressed and in a funk. And it was the community, people that have worked with us or come to our shows, who were like, hey, is Sankofa doing something? And I'm like, what? They're like, yeah. So, you know, I know you're probably going through a lot, but, you know, when's the show? And it just, the way she asked me was so, like, matter of fact. It was like she knew that I was going to continue, like, before I did. And I was like, oh, this means we all got to keep going, because for people like that, they're waiting on the win. They're waiting on something. So we did a concert where people just submitted their self-tapes of singing songs and inspirational things, Disney things, just silly stuff. And we raised money to give back to four charities that like impacted, you know, people for COVID. And that was the first show that kind of got us back going at the beginning of this year. No, that was in May. So
who knows what day that, it is? I have no idea.
Right. Like, I'm like, yeah, pandemic timing calendars. but after that, it kind of let me know, there are people who do care about us and there are people who really need us to exist. So as long as I'm still feeling that and as long as that voice is still there, we're going to keep going.
Absolutely. I feel like that is like a great idea to end on, this idea of staying strong and continuing to work on your art. It's just it's important for all of us to do, but I'm glad that you're confident and like working on your skill set. You're like developing so much during this time.
I am. Yes, it's weird. I probably would have never been bold enough to work on solo projects like this had I not been in this pandemic. So in a way, you know, I am thankful. I am happy for it because it has allowed me to be a little more free. So, you know, shout out to anyone who's listening to this, like, please still make art, whether that's just posting silly stuff on your social media, even TikTok can be art, depending on what you're doing on it. Like, keep yourself creatively busy because, you know, that's a muscle and you don't want to lose it.
Yeah, totally. I bought myself a Christmas present. Sorry, it's what happens when you get older.
Oh, what'd you buy?
I bought myself this book that's like 365 creative prompts, right?
Oh.
And they're just little. They're nothing huge. It's not like write a screenplay. Yeah. Like it's like, here's two sentences of the beginning of a story. Write the rest of the story. And it's just like one page, right? Or it's like draw the nearest fruit, you know, and you draw whatever. Like it's just different things every day. And my goal is to do one a day just to sharpen up a little bit. You know, I spent a lot of time with a toddler. There's creativity and then there's the creativity that I need. And I need to work on this. So I got that to jumpstart myself, to get myself going and doing it.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of times when we say like make art, do stuff, it feels overwhelming to people. They're like, I don't know how to do it. Why?
Yeah.
You know, and especially listening to you, like, oh my God, you're amazing. Like you got so much going on. You had so many different talents. Like this is, you're amazing. You know, I can't be you. right? And anyone listening, you don't have to be Ulrich. You, that's not who you need to be. You need to be you. You need to find your own thing.
I use prompts too. Like, I literally, one of the things, if I'm like in writer's block or whatever, if I'm in a funk, I'll go to middle school writing prompts on Google. And it's like the cutest little shit that just gets me going. Like, the other one the other day was, write a scene about two lovers picking apples. And I was like, ooh. Or the other one was, write a scene about a bird migrating to the north for the winter or something like that. So I wrote a whole slam poem, and then I worked back on my screenplay. So, you know, it can be small things, but you want to be able to be free and channel all of that energy, whatever you're feeling, even if it's negative thoughts, because like I said, I'm working on a rock album. Yeah. So I got a lot of stuff that I found out I gotta purge all of this. So you gotta, you know, write in a journal or in a song, or write a letter and burn it within, you know, safety measures. Do not what in you California. Can to make sure that you, yeah, not in Cali, because you know, I don't want y'all getting in trouble.
Put it in the ocean. I'll go right.
Yeah, on. Do what you can, because you got to get that out. Because if you don't, it's gonna eat you alive.
Oh my God. Ulrich, thank you so much for being on the podcast and chatting with me about so many amazing. I feel like we just went into just like such a wild rabbit hole of like,
we probably creativity had so many different tangents.
And, oh no, I'm so into it. Absolutely.
Thank you for having me. This has been amazing. I love artistic deep dives. So this was a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.